Welcome everyone to episode 44 of the Business of Sport. My name is Ahmed Al-Houli, and as he does every single week, Mr. Rob Biel joins me on the show. Rob, how you going, buddy? How's things?
Mate, how you doing? Doing good over here in Arizona, celebrating our Arizona Diamondbacks making it to the World Series. Who had that winning ticket?
Wow, very exciting times, and somebody just made a lot of money. big show today, lots to talk about. As always, we will be getting into the nitties and gritties of many, many of the latest updates in the world of the business of sport. We start with one of the most talked about case studies, I'd say, or cases in the world of sport, is the arrival of Lionel Messi to Inter Miami, to the MLS, to America, the biggest stage on earth. We go back now and we sort of reflect on the year it was for the MLS, on the year it was for Inter Miami, on the year it was for Lionel Messi, and what a year it was. Ups and downs, started like a house on fire, won the first cup in Inter Miami's history, sold out stadiums, record TV numbers, record MLS passes for Apple TV, record-breaking deals. It was all happening, mate. And then, boom, cops an injury, down he goes. Inter Miami struggled to get past their 14th place and finish 14th. Now, many say the MLS campaign was a bit of a failure, and many say the cup campaign was, obviously they won, so that's huge success. What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I mean, obviously, we've kind of been on this topic since the moment that he said, I'm coming to Miami, right? And we've talked about jersey sales and what this means for a league with eyeballs and a new TV deal, and all of the impact, the overall impact of Messi arriving in the U.S., arriving in MLS. I don't think that anyone is going to say it was a failure. Revenue of jersey sales, Apple TV, exceeding its $700,000 goal or 700,000 subscriber goal and getting close to 2 million is massive. That MLS went to the top of the discussion board every time he played during that run to the win of the league championship. Eyeballs, people talking about it. I mean, other players around the world, Griezmann and the like, Suarez starting to come to the wanting to come to the U.S. because they're seeing the success that Lionel was having with his team. Now, I would also say that success doesn't happen if Jordi Alba and Sergio Busquets don't also arrive to Inter Miami to kind of take a team that was dead last or near dead last when they arrived and elevated that club. They elevated that club to win the League Cup championship. They did win their first two MLS games. They moved out of last place. They moved free and clear of dead last. Problem was, to your point, there's the international window popped in there. Messi misses a few games to go play with Argentina. Also, he's coming off a World Cup run, a season with his final season there with PSG. Taking some rest, whatever. And, he was exhausted, took some time, and Inter Miami still wasn't structurally sound enough internally to, get the wins without him. Alba gets hurt, Busquets gets hurt, suffers a few injuries. And the combination of not having him, not having a couple of the other guys, and more importantly, what he did was elevate the play of this league. Because I think at the end of the day, pros are pros. I think they got tired of hearing that Lionel Messi was going to just come into this league and run roughshod right to the title. And you know what? There are some teams that said, not on my watch, BS. And so if I'm the league, you know, Messi made everybody better. He was the tide that rose all ships, because it made other clubs, other players, ownership, management, basically look themselves in the eye and go, are we really going to let him just show up and win this whole thing? Honestly, everybody was in awe when he showed up and went through and won the League Cup. Some might question that, maybe he got a few favorable calls here and there, but at the end of the day, they still won it. I think they, they probably win the U.S. Open Cup if, we play that game a little bit longer. But the fact of the matter is, he only lost two games. And those games were at the end when they were basically eliminated. One was the U.S. Cup, and then a game that they were already eliminated out of MLS. So I'm not going to look at anything that it was negative. I'm going to look at, the overall positives. Messi is going to take some time off here. Not going to go on loan to Barcelona as was rumored. He's going to relax. He's going to enjoy his family. He's going to come back in February, March next year, an absolute demon. And you'll see this Inter Miami club come out of the gate, firing on all cylinders. Suarez is going to show up. He's now got his buddies back. He's got his Barcelona crew from 2015 is now going to be, in the starting lineup for Inter Miami. And so I think that that's going to be the real team that you see. I think we saw flashes of it this year. And I think it was going to be hard to sustain. But what I think from my standpoint is that you saw the other clubs in MLS basically raise their game and say, this is, we're not going to let this happen. Even if they were playing that pink jersey, they were motivated beyond just winning a game. They wanted to prove a point. And, ultimately, there was way too much ground for them to make up, because they had no room for error, and the injuries kind of weakened the team enough to where when they needed 3 points, they got one, and then they needed 3 points again, and then they take a loss, and then a couple of those back to back, then the math caught up with them and it was done. But I am eager as a MLS Pass subscriber, for next season to start, because I think that it will be great theater. I think it'll be a lot of fun to watch. And I think that Inter Miami is going to be a very, very good team, but I think there's going to be some other teams that are going to take it to heart, what everybody thought was going to happen is going to have to be earned. If it makes this league better, I'm going to be excited about it, because I think that'll be good business for all of us that are in the space, that that soccer and MLS becomes a much better quality league, and that our domestic players aspire to play in this league to get better, and obviously some of the talent around the world doesn't feel that they have to go to play in front of 600 people in Saudi Arabia just because they're writing them a big check. Does Neymar need to, wreck his knee, unfortunately, in playing for his country. But that easy could have happened in Saudi Arabia in the Asian Cup or something. I mean, it's if you're going to play this game at a high level, this market with Copa America and World Cup on the horizon is the platform that I think you want to play as one of the top players if you're not playing in the Premier League. Honestly, I think that this could very well move itself into being, top two, top three league in the next couple of years with influx of talent. And Messi is the driver of that, because he came while he still had game.
Absolutely. Let's look at some of the numbers that happened this year. Inter Miami has the best-selling Adidas soccer jersey in North America, and that's ahead of Manchester United, Real Madrid, Juventus, Bayern Munich, and Arsenal. Crazy. Absolutely crazy. They're all powerhouse clubs.
Yep.
After the in his first 24 hours after switching teams, He has more jerseys sold than any athlete in Fanatics history, which is obviously the merchandise brand. And we know the names that have been through Fanatics. I mean, insane. Adidas received almost 500,000 requests from stores and suppliers for Inter Miami jerseys after Messi announced his decision, like almost instantly. More fans attended Major League Soccer matches in 2003 than ever before. They averaged 22,000 fans a game, and the fan attendance reached a record 10.9 million fans. That's huge for the MLS. Huge. That 22,000 number is amazing because that's the perfect soccer/football audience. In small stadiums, soccer-built stadiums, perfect. Good atmosphere, good vibe, beautiful place to be. So I think tick after tick after tick, other than the usual stats that we usually hear about, that the MLS pass that he also smashed, he pushed it up closer to 2 million, and all these other social media numbers that he took from a few hundred thousand to past 6 million. And then you look at the valuation of the club. When he first got there, he moved up to 600 million. It's probably inched up even more since then. So we're definitely seeing the US market as a home ground, a home base for soccer, for football, from the valuations of the clubs to the lifestyles to the talent that could potentially come there because of those two. Because when you have big valuations, you have resources, you have amazing training centers, you have amazing marketing, branding. It all works together. When that works together, all of a sudden players say, hang on a second, why am I playing in the freezing cold in Europe Europe, right? Or the UK, I don't know if that's still considered.
Why am I in Liverpool or Luton Town, yeah, when I could be in Los Angeles or South Beach?
Exactly. On the West Coast, on the East Coast, beautiful weather, beautiful vibe, lots to do, never get bored, and live an absolute life of luxury. And it's a no-brainer. So if these things all come together, they develop at the same time, it's 100% going to become a destination for athletes, for talent, and the TV market, the media market is going to drive all this, because how do we know that America has the biggest media market in the world? Hands down, the NFL's shown that through its domestic league, not international, through its domestic league, has bigger TV rights than all the major football leagues around the world, actually more than all the leagues around the world. Yeah. So it's absolutely going to become a destination if they stay on this trajectory, if egos don't get involved, if politics doesn't get too involved. But the good thing is Apple's the broadcaster. Apple's got tons of money, tons of resources, tons of technology, and they got a billion people at their hands within a push of a button at all times. So the future is really bright, and I think that we're going to see a huge transition to the U.S. Yeah. market moving forward.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think the one other thing that we probably see, you know, that's not as much on the business side, but it's more on the personnel side, is I think you might see the MLS kind of look at their roster, you know, roster structure, so that you know, what Inter Miami was able to do, I think that they want to see more clubs be that aggressive and take that approach, and obviously expand their rosters a little bit so that the talent does rise, so that you can go out and get another, you know, international signing or a designated signee, and raise the level. Because if, you know, it's been a league that has attracted those superstars during the twilights of their career. The goal now is to attract them during their prime years.
Exactly.
And Messi, and arguably, Messi is still one of the best players in the world. Is he on the back end of his prime years? Yes. But he came over not as a, you know.
He just won a World Cup.
He just won a World Cup. He's 36 years old, and he's still got plenty of game left. as he showed. And if you get, you know, a Griezmann, you get, you know, a level of that player,
they will come.
To, you know, to start looking at coming over here. You know, and obviously we're seeing players from South America and Mexico, you know, preferring to move up to MLS than to go over and play in the Premier League.
Well, it's
a lot of that,
it's around,
you know,
the corner.
Yeah, it's around the corner, and the league with these numbers and these new revenues can be more competitive in the transfer market than they have been in the past. And so, you know, that again is just going to raise the talent level, and I would love to be able to see some of the matches that we would wake up at 2 a.m. in the morning to watch, you know, in a Bundesliga match or a Premier League match on a Sunday morning, and actually be able to watch that on a, you know, a Thursday night MLS broadcast would be kind of cool.
For sure, for sure. Which is a perfect segue into our next conversation. Italy's Serie A has completed a 5-year pact with DAZN and Sky Italia with $4.8 billion. This deal is great. Financial lifeline. Huge change across international soccer impacting the Serie A league. Beautiful. Now, one step further. AC Milan hits its $400 million in revenue, making the club profitable for the first time in 17 years. Under new American ownership, American owners came in, started this whole arm called the AC Milan media arm, and really took it to a whole new level on all fronts, cleaned up the club. Now, its rivals, Inter Milan, Juventus, are still losing money. And and Juventus is in the top 5 clubs in the world. Their social media channels have 50, 60 million on each, right? They're huge. Why are they losing money, right? Because these teams are being absolutely abolished by corruption and the likes of. And we've seen this year, literally they lost 10 points. Then they got fined. And the same thing is happening over and over again. Now, the American owners come into AC Milan. All of a sudden, AC Milan's making a profit. And it's hitting ridiculous amount of revenue. I guarantee you the other two won't be making a profit anytime soon. And imagine now the valuation when you're turning over $400 million in revenue. So again, the American influence in football now is international. And then we look at Chelsea, and then we look at other Premier League teams, and then we look at how this media deal for an established football market, soccer market, right, over 5 years is $4.8 billion. And Italy is one of the homes of soccer. It's an old established soccer market. This could potentially become the annual deal in the MLS, literally, annually. That's how much potential there is here. There's a reason why FIFA's opening up offices in Miami and bringing over hundreds of staff. Because they know that's where the growth is. That's where their next money grab is for FIFA. They've milked the Middle East, and they'll milk Saudi Arabia in 2030. And now, with the Americans, it's a different ball game. Things have to be done a bit more above board. So, again, this continues the conversation of where everything is leading towards America becoming the destination of football.
Well, I think, you know, look, you're spot on. We talk about AC Milan, American ownership, signing of three, you know, American national team players, you know, getting Pulisic on the transfer, signing Musa and
he's killing it, by the way. Pulisic is killing it.
Yeah, he's in a place where a coach, a manager, you know, loves him, you know, knows how to use him. And, you know, is in a system that fits him. And, you know, and look, man, London to Milan, I mean, like, you know, that's upgrade in my book. You know, just and at the end of the day, he's playing free. You know, I just think he just doesn't have the pressure on him. The expectations are realistic, and he's just playing the game and enjoying it. And so, you know, it's a great thing to see. To your point, I think, you know, FIFA obviously moving staff over here in preparation for the next two tournaments that are here with Copa America and World Cup. I honestly think that if MLS continues to trend the way that it is, you might see a Champions League berth for an MLS champion, you know, an MLS top four getting into the Champions League to kind of create that global market. Because right now we don't get to play in those reindeer games. But if we start getting the talent from Europe that's ending up over here and playing in our league and playing at the level that a Champions League would be somewhat watered down without a Lionel Messi or a Griezmann or, you know, name some of the other, you know, I mean, I don't think that we'll get Mbappe over here, but, you know, imagine if he wakes up and goes, it's a pretty good gig going on over there. And maybe I can go play in Toronto or Montreal or something and comes over to an MLS club, a French speaking club and can, you know, have some success. Who knows? So, if I'm FIFA, I want to be right here, to kind of get around that system, or maybe I create my own. I mean, I start looking at really the lot of the tournaments that we've talked about, the creation of the League Cup. Obviously, they've got the Liga MX MLS Champions League kind of matches going on. I mean, there's a lot of potential, especially with, you know, the attention that is coming on that sport because it's now being played, you know, on our TVs during normal business hours, if you will. And some of the top players in the world are now playing here and recognizable names and just the level of play going up. So, you know, it's a perfect storm. The DAZN, which we kind of chuckle that, you know, 3 years ago they were bankrupt because all of a sudden all the events that they were having were no longer. And they have been a great rise from the ashes story to where they're, you know, back in boxing, back in the media rights acquisition business.
NFL.
NFL overseas. They have repositioned themselves as a fantastic player in the media rights space, and numbers like that for Serie A can only bode well for the next contract for an MLS and frankly for a Premier League, that if you do it right and if you're putting in top product, that, you know, there's going to be there, you know, that streaming space, I would imagine that an Amazon and Apple start, you know, making runs at some of the Premier Leagues as well. Or premium leagues, you know, in Europe.
For sure.
It'll be certainly one to watch, and I think all sport, you know, in general, we're watching, you know, ESPN having to make some decisions, you know, as it relates to some of their upcoming rights. So these streaming platforms are becoming incredibly aggressive in the rights acquisition space.
Yeah, for sure. Which sort of leads us on to our next one, next sport or next event, which is Formula One, the Las Vegas Grand Prix. Formula One for many years struggled to garner audiences and develop young audiences. Then Netflix came in with their series and Drive to Survive, and all of a sudden it's flying. So again, the streaming networks playing a pivotal role in the growth of a sport, perfect example. Now, their problems are not there. Their problems are they've come to Las Vegas, they've taken over the strip, and the championship has pretty much been wrapped up.
It's over.
It's over. 50% of the country won't get to watch the race until 1 a.m. Now they're investing $200 million in a facility there. The event's going to cost about $500 million. It's really come at about time, I think. And there's lots of complaints locally from the other hotels on the strip. You were there recently. Tell us more.
Yeah, well, you know, again, this is something that Formula One, if you were watching it this year, I mean, you've watched the dominance of Red Bull and Max Verstappen, and you're like, he's winning every race. This is over. And so if you're, you know, it's one of the things that NASCAR, you know, looked at years ago when, you know, Jimmy Johnson was just racking up, winning up the NASCAR title, because it was just point accumulation. And they got to these races at the end of the season and it was over. So they created the playoff. And so that those last races of the series, you know, were actually playoff races and not victory laps. You know, Vegas has become a victory lap because it doesn't matter who wins, that it has no effect on the championship. And, you know, with the prices that they were charging, the inconvenience, because Vegas has been busy without Formula One ever showing up.
Of course. You know,
a lot of places, Formula One is the biggest event that comes to that market. In Las Vegas, the Super Bowl is not going to be the biggest event that comes there. I mean, you know, you've got International Fight Week. You've got, the Sphere is bringing in, you know, business. You've got, probably the biggest event that comes there is actually the rodeo, you know, NFR at the end of the year. I mean, that those 10 days, you know, is bigger than anything the Super Bowl is going to do as far as people. So it's one of those things where Formula One is in a very unique position coming to a market where they're not the biggest thing, the biggest deal around. Two is that Vegas, you know, the strip is totally been, you know, reshaped. They're building up stanchions so that they could block your view at street level, building them 30 feet high. The walkway bridges that are designed for you to get from one side of the strip to the other are being, being covered up so that you can't look out. You can't actually stand on that bridge and watch the race because the cars will be going underneath you. They initially, and we talked about this, I think several weeks back, that they were initially trying to, put a $1,500 a head bounty on all the, customers of the strip view hotels, that if someone was going to eat in their restaurant and there's a view of the racetrack, that you had to put a $1,500 a head premium on people eating in your restaurant. That has been come off, and you're just paying a licensing fee of about 50 grand per hotel. Still, they own that land. They built that land. They built that strip. You're telling them I'm going to own your view for the weekend and you're going to have to pay extra for it. I don't know that that's going to be something that's going to last long term. And then the last thing is that, you know, just being a competitive, competitors, America likes, wants to see quality races. They want to see something that means something, especially if it's an international event, right? You know, we love it when Manchester United and Barcelona come over here and play a friendly. We sell that place out because that's, for us, it's like, that's the best of the best of soccer playing here on our grounds. Well, Formula One is arguably, the highest level of racing. And so you want to see a race that actually matters. Max Verstappen has no reason to race hard this race. He's already won.
Exactly.
You know, and so where's the competition? And Lewis Hamilton last week gets DQ'd. People are mad, but it didn't mean anything, right? It didn't mean anything in the bigger scope of things because Max has already won. That's one of those things where if this race needs to have a little bit more meaning to it, and for it being the first race, given that all the other inconveniences that it's brought on the market, I still think it'll be successful. I still think it'll be a great spectacle. But what I hope is that, what this does is that, because it's the American market, as we've talked about with soccer, for Formula One is very important, very, very important. Because you look at a lot of the money on some of these teams, guess what? A lot of U.S. money is on those teams now. There's U.S. Right. ownership in those teams. I think we covered it, last week, Alpine team now having, names like Patrick Mahomes and, name brand athletes from the U.S. are now investing in Formula One. And guess what? Those guys want to see their teams race here and actually race for something. So Formula One's got to maybe take a real close look at their their championship point system to kind of create some competition here, because if they're not going to deal with it on the manufacturing side, because whatever Red Bull's doing, nobody else can figure out, and they're just blowing people away. You got to create something that at least at the end that says, hey, we reseed the top 10 drivers coming into the last 5 or 6 races of the season, of which Vegas kind of falls right in there. And Vegas could be one of those playoff races, so that it's got a different incentive. If you win this one, there's the old Binion's jackpot at the end of it, that you win this race, not only do you win, but you win $5 million. Kind of create something that makes it not just a normal race, even in the scope of the series. So
it keeps it exciting.
Absolutely. And again, we just talk as, at this point, sometimes as fans, but also, if we've got clients that are spending money, in Formula One that have bought, advertising, we want people to watch. And
exactly.
The marketplace isn't going to tune in. Half of our market's going to be asleep when this race goes off.
Yeah. For sure.
And I live on the West Coast. Hey, I love Monday Night Football at 5 o'clock, because I can be done at 8 o'clock and get on with the rest of my evening. But this is a race that's going to take place. They want it at nighttime on the strip. That's great. That's wonderful. Problem is, you take off at midnight, East Coast time, and that's, New York's doing something else. Especially in November.
Disaster. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Especially in November, which, we're watching football. So.
For sure. Absolutely. All right. We'll stay in Vegas. The UFC announced on Tuesday a huge new sponsorship deal with Anheuser-Busch that makes Bud Light, which was the original sponsor of the UFC, the official beer partner of the UFC. It's believed the deal will be in excess of $100 million. According to Anheuser-Busch, it will give the beer brand, Bud Light, exposure to over 700 million fans in 170 countries. Wow. And as well as television reach of 900 million TV households. Ridiculous numbers. If you think of the scale, what the UFC has become from that dingy little cage many years ago in 2002, when people were just doing whatever they want, to a brand that has 700 million fans worldwide, 170 countries, 900 million TV households. That's absolutely bonkers.
Well, we were talking a little bit about this prior to the show. And look, first and foremost, UFC's been a very popular topic on our podcast from a business standpoint. Dana White has been spot on making the right moves. And they are a brand, a league that is, top of class in combative sports. I don't think there's much argument there that they are.
For sure. No one comes close.
They are the gold standard in combative sports. And Bud Light is a brand that's the official beer of the NFL that is still recovering from a very bad marketing decision. And I think what I said previously is that this is their version of a Hail Mary. Is that this is a chance to save the brand by aligning the brand with a league and a sport that is as undeniable of tough, gritty,
manly,
competitive, manly, as a sport can be. I mean, I would say, MMA, UFC, right up there with rugby as like the, some of the, just the most, physical of sports.
Sure.
And obviously there's a history there. And Dana White, I don't think that man has ever walked away from a challenge. And I think he looks at this as a challenge. I think he took Modelo to new heights when that deal came in. Every brand that has come in with UFC has elevated its market share, its stature, because of what UFC does. UFC embraces their brands. They love competitor brands, and they like to take them to, you know, move them up a couple of notches in the chain. And I think Dana White, as a marketer, as a businessman, and as a, you know, as a beer drinking American, if you will, says, you know what, that's a brand that is in need of of help, and yeah. I believe I can help them, and I believe, and oh, by the way, they're going to pay me $100 million for me to help them. You know, I'm motivated to do that. I'm a competitor. I think I can make Bud Light relevant again.
Also, Rob, it comes down to understanding your audience. Who is your audience, right?
Yeah.
And it's not about just taking money from companies and putting them there and forcing it down your audience's throat. No, it's about understanding your audience and bringing in the brands that are going to add value to your audience's day-to-day, right? And something meaningful. And,
yeah.
And that's where a lot of leagues, clubs, organizations go wrong, because they just take the money. Like the biggest one was the crypto one, FTX, right? So many people took the money, and the audience doesn't know a thing about crypto, nor did they give a crap about crypto. And that's why it all went downhill, because there wasn't the acquisition value that there should be. So
their core customer had no idea how to use it, how to value it.
Exactly. So that's why the UFC has been so successful in obtaining these brands and then taking them to the next level and helping them really grow globally. Because now the UFC, if you're a brand that wants to go global, you know exactly where to go, to the UFC. They'll take you to markets all around the world, literally, and then enjoy servicing those markets, right?
Absolutely, and I think you're going to see, you know, when Dana White does his post fight press conferences, I think you're going to see a Bud Light on the podium. I think he's going to pour a Bud Light every day and go, man, that was a great fight. Let me enjoy my Bud Light. And he's going to drink it, look you right in the eye, and go, that's right. Drinking a Bud Light.
He's pretty healthy at the moment, so he'll be breaking a few rules.
So, but you know, again, the goal, you know, is that I think from a brand standpoint, they are looking to reconnect with a core customer that they feel the UFC delivers has had a tremendous success. In building, you know, building a brand, because they've had that experience before, previously, they are in a situation because of decisions to, you know, this is a move that, makes sense, and I think, you know, UFC is in a pretty, you know, solid place to where, obviously, you know. You know, the money makes a lot of sense, but to your point, I mean, you know, like it or not, you know, Anheuser-Busch is a true red, American white, and blue brand. American brand.
For sure.
That's a blue chip partner, and that's good for UFC. It's good for their investors, and I think you'll see. I hope it's successful. I hope that it works. I hope that maybe people wake up and go, okay, you know, we're done crushing the can here. They've learned their lesson, and they're getting back to basics.
One marketing decision can destroy a company. Another one can reemerge it to the top. And I firmly believe this is the one that can reemerge it back to the top. We're staying in Vegas. The Sphere. Lot to talk about the Sphere, and we'll come to Dana White as well, because he's obsessed with the Sphere at the moment. The Sphere now is a favorite to host the NHL draft. They're a new jersey patch sponsor of the New York Knicks, same owners. And Dana White, two press conferences ago, I think it was two weeks ago, watching a press conference, and he goes, I am obsessed with that place. He goes, I call those guys every single day at MSG and I tell them, I want to host the first combat brands, the first combat sport in the sphere. And guess what he said? This really boggled my mind. He goes, we need till September next year. And I go to him, why?
Mexican Independence Day.
Yeah. Yeah. And I said to him, why? He goes, because we've got to understand the lighting, how it's going to work. We've got to create an experience that's going to be unforgettable, because now you have all these screens around you where you can immerse someone and take them into a whole different world. And this really, really emphasizes why they've been so successful. Their events are crazy. They consider every little thing. For him to say he needs a year, after doing all the events that they've done, to come sit down and say, I need a year to be in that place, to knock out all the little glitches, to make sure the experience is 100% perfect, we need a year. Because they were comparing boxing brands who were going to come in and do some sort of fight night there. He goes, bastardized the experience. They'll ruin it. He goes, please, MSG, do not let them do it before us, because we will show you how to put the best show on earth on. And I firmly believe he will. And this is why the Sphere is such an exciting project, because it really changes things.
Yeah, well, you know, you're exactly right, and the, you know, having a familiarity with the Sphere and what it's constructed to do, you know.
Well, you watched it pretty much get put together.
I watched it get built, and sat with their engineers and you know asked and you know heard the answers to questions on, you know, what is the experience there, why is it being built, why does it cost so much, etc. And, you know, it's a full sensory, you know, venue. It's, you know, you feel, you touch, you smell, you know, you hear, you see. I mean, all of your senses are enlightened, and in some cases assaulted while you're in there watching a show. And you too opening that building, that is every act that goes into that building has to create a show that fits what the Sphere can do. You don't go in there and just plug in an amp and play a concert. This is not, you know, it's much more than that. You've got to have something that immerses them in sound, immerses them in touch, feel, you know, vision, etc. And so Dana White, he went to the show, and you know, he came out of there talking about, not only was the show unbelievable, but the, you know, given his obsession for, you know, just what the Sphere was, you know, from what he heard, and he is that he went in and experienced it, and he's, you know, it even jazzed him up more. You know, it was the caffeine to his buzz, right? And he, sure, he came out of there, you know, talking about, I'm calling those guys every day. My assistant has one job every day, and it's to get on their, you know, get on their schedule and confirm that we can have this date. And more importantly, you know, he recognized the importance of, you know, not only do they put on great shows at T-Mobile, and when they go around the world, that, you know, they put on, you know, the best combative shows ever, because they're so focused on the experience. He knows that even the best show he's ever done he can't take that show into the Sphere, because it's like a one-dimensional show into a four-dimensional venue. And he goes, I got three other dimensions that I have to build around my show. And he said, boxing will put a ring up and they'll run the same thing, and they'll try to run their cameras on the Sphere, and it won't look good. It'll look blurry. It'll look crappy. It'll be a horrible experience. Hell, and I think he maybe made the comment about they can't even run their own replays. He goes, we are going to spend $1 million just on production. He goes, those promoters aren't going to do that. They're trying to figure out to split the money on the pay-per-view. They could care less about what someone in the building thinks. Dana is absolutely 100% a perfectionist, and he is going to make a show that is going to be memorable in that building. And I hope you and I are there to see it, because it will be awesome. It will 100%. Be massive, and it will be memorable.
100%. Perfect, perfect segue into our next one. Showtime Sports calls it quits. 37 years, see you later, finished, done, dusted. Two of the premier boxing channels that have aired boxing on the airways for the last, say, 50 years in HBO and Showtime are now gone. What does that mean for the sport?
Well, it shows you the state of the sport. We just talked about Dana White, UFC. It is a unified structure. There is no question who the leader is. And you and I will, if there's a fight that we wanted to see, I'm sure Dana White is sitting in that same room going, that's a great fight. That's a great fight.
Exactly.
Great fights always happen. Boxing has been, you know, and it's UFC. There's not UFC BA and BA UFC. I mean, there's not six different letter organizations all trying to claim a heavyweight champ, a middleweight champ, et cetera. Boxing has had this fragmented, governing body. You've got promoters, not a league, running things. And so you've got entities that are trying to make fights, but you know, they don't want their fighter to lose. So they're not going to fight the other guy's best fighter, because even though that would make a lot of money in a pay-per-view fight, well, someone's going to lose. And now that fight's not going to be, in their mind, 100%. Not going to be as valuable anymore. Where, you know, and at the end of the day, the Showtimes and the HBOs of the world, there aren't the fighters that used to be out there. There's not, you know, we talk about Hagler, Hearns, Duran, and those trilogy of fights, you know, Mike Tyson, you know, coming out and just knocking guys out in the first round. We've got heavyweight champions that are now fighting former MMA fighters, and that's the fight we're all waiting for. You know, when we've got heavyweight champs kind of avoiding each other, we've got top fighters saying that no one will take a we got Deontay Wilder saying that no one will take a $4 million, purse to fight him. I've got a fighter, Michael Hunter, will fight him right now for $4 million and might beat him, but they don't want that fight. You know, boxing is at a crossroads, and they're at a crossroads from a competitive standpoint, from what the fan wants to see. And that crossroads is getting accelerated by two of the major players, are now out of the business, out of the television business. So who's going to be their pay-per-view partner? We talked about it earlier, you know, some of these streaming components, but I think they're going to be much more shrewd when it comes to this. And so unless they're getting, you know, Mayweather Pacquiao Prime, you know, as a fight, then, you know, they're not going to take a Ryan Garcia kind of made up fight against some, you know, comeback fighter kind of thing. I think, you know, we as consumers are smart enough now to where we want to see the best fights. I want to see Tyson Fury fight a professional boxer. I want to see I want to see him fight AJ. I want to see him fight Wilder again. Those are the fights I want to see. I don't need to see a YouTuber fighting a boxer, you know. And when it comes down to the scorecards, then the boxer lost, you know, in my book. You know, if the boxer can't beat a YouTuber, then you're not a pro boxer. You lose the fight. If you don't knock him out, you don't win.
It just puts the sport in a really, really bad place. I mean, I put this, what we're seeing now, we've lost a generation worth of talent. From the Mayweather days to now, that mentality of protecting your record and not taking the risks and being in those big fights, we lost a generation of talent to UFC, to MMA. Yeah. So that's going to take some time to build back up, and you need somebody to come back and have that mentality of building a boxing league, getting away from these sanctioning bodies who are destroying the sport, because there's so much segmentation, and the pie is only getting smaller and smaller and smaller. So eventually, it's just going to eventually get too small, and we're going to hit rock bottom. These cable networks are gone. ESPN's still in the game. ESPN's facing a lot of uncertainties because of the current crisis that they're in. And they only host top-ranked shows. DAZN is spending $1 billion. They gave it to Eddie Hearn. Where is it? He couldn't even get into the US market. Came in with really bad attitude, bad mentality. Didn't understand the local market, local demographics as well. Wasted. Boxer, who was started once Eddie Hearn moved away from Sky, has now done a deal with NBC, $15 million deal. And guess what that is? That's literally, they're doing everything. They're just putting it through their network. And I mean, when was the last time we seen NBC do fights and big fights? And who's going to watch English fighters in the US other than diehard boxing fans? And how many of them are going to sit there and watch on NBC? It's just become ridiculous. Now, one place where boxing is really doing well is Australia. We have about three or four world champions. I think it's three world champions: Ebony Bridges, Tim Zhu, and Jai Apatia. Three. Have I missed anyone? No, I don't think so. And we have the affiliation with No Limit Boxing, which is a guy called Matt Rose, and Fox Sports in Australia. Fox has become the home of boxing, and it's really doing well for the first time. We had that lull for many years. For the first time in many years, it's doing really well. There's a network, the fights are happening, the good fights are happening, people are tuning in because Tim Zhu, Costa Zhu's son, former world champ, massive, massive hype, it's happening. So we know it can work. That's not the problem. The problem is we need to get rid of these dinosaurs that are killing the sport. And until we do that, the UFC will continue with its dominance. And Dana White was talking about Showtime Sports. They couldn't get a replay right. This is a cable network, for God's sake. And he's right. Their production is hopeless. Like, a lot of their production is really, really bad. Like, you'll be watching a fight and you end up on a different stream. Like, it's rubbish. So anyway, that's what's led to the downfall of the sport. It's sad. We're boxing fans. But we have to keep going. The last one that I really want to get into is the NBA talking to Amazon Prime and looking at setting up Tuesday night and Thursday night as these feature massive events like Thursday night football and Monday night football. So the NBA has pretty much turned around and said, okay, how can we generate more media revenue, broadcast revenue? Let's look at our friends on top of us, the NFL, and do the same and bring in these different partners. It's pretty simple, isn't it?
Look, sports is a copycat world. And when you look at, a lot of the instant replay and the streaming and things like that, and, we finally got to putting, sponsors on our jerseys over here, because, the rest of the world has been doing that for a long time. And for whatever reason, we were just keeping it pristine. And now, new revenue streams, streaming has become popular. The NFL is on from Thursday night to Monday night, dominating the networks, and has six media partners, that are involved. And so, yes, absolutely. If you're the NBA and you're becoming a global market or a global brand, for sure. 140 international players, I think, are on, rosters on opening day, something like that. I mean, so, massive, almost half the league is international players. So, how do we create this, must watch TV scenario? And you've got, the Amazon Primes of the world out there going, I want some, I want a night, I'm all in. My Thursdays are booked. Let's do Tuesday nights. Let's have some fun. Let's create a marquee matchup. Let's make those, with halftime shows and all that, create those special moments. And more importantly, accessible around the world, right?
Exactly.
With those platforms. Exactly. So it, Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think this year we've got the in-season tournament as well happening for the first time in Las Vegas, creating those tent pole events, you know, on a, you know, NBA Tuesday night on Amazon Prime, you know, why not? And if you've got, and more importantly, you've got those new streaming platforms looking for that premium content. Nothing gets more premium than Wimby against LeBron, or Durant Book against Dame Lillard and Giannis. I mean, you know, you've got matchups that can be created, you know, across the board. And what you got to make sure is that night's not a load management night. So that's the one thing I'll put in the contract. If I'm working for any one of them, that's not a load management night. If you're on my network and I'm the game, everybody's playing. Unless
ask Charles Barkley about load management. He wasn't too happy about it recently. But anyway, that's a whole different conversation that we can talk about. We've gone way over time, just under the hour mark. I think it's been an awesome episode. Thank you, Rob. As always, thank you to everyone who tunes in. And as I do in every single episode, parting words, Rob. What do you got for us?
Well, parting words, great show. Exciting as we head into this fourth quarter. We've got, you know, the NBA kicked off this week. We've got the World Series happening. It's going to be happening in my backyard, surprisingly, as the Diamondbacks take on the Texas Rangers. We watch the new talent hitting the NBA. NFL is starting to hit its stride. We're coming down to the stretch of college football. These next few months of sport are going to be exciting. There's deals that are going to be happening in the sport. We're seeing new jersey patches popping up. So, you know, there's no doubt that when you and I reconvene next week, there will be a massive story that jumps up in the sports world. And obviously we look forward to covering it from the business angle. And every once in a while, you and I put our fan hats on and talk as fans of the sport as well. So looking forward to it, my friend. Appreciate the time and appreciate everybody tuning in.
All right, everyone. Thank you very much. Take care. We'll catch you all next week on the Business of Sport. Bye-bye.